Welcome to Not That Girl Anymore, part of the Liminal Network. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon. This is more than a podcast. It's a sisterhood. We're reclaiming our voices, our worth, and our lives. One story, one truth, one brave step at a time. Hey, friends. Welcome back to Not That Girl Anymore. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon, trauma therapist and coach, and the founder here of Embrace Your Brave. And today we are talking about something that I find to be deeply misunderstood. And that's this concept of high conflict divorce. Because what often gets labeled as high conflict isn't two difficult people who can't get along. It's coercive control continuing after separation. It's abuse with a different name. And so if this topic kind of hits close to home for you, I just want to say this gently. You're allowed to take a break. You're allowed to breathe. You're allowed to pause and come back to this when you're ready. And I want you to know that you're not alone. So I have a very special guest with me here today that I am super excited to introduce you to that has a lot to say about this topic. And so today my guest is Susie Miller Wendell. And Susie is an author. She's a trauma recovery practitioner, and she's the voice behind Nurturing After Narcissism, which is her book, right?
Yes.
She supports people healing from narcissistic abuse in relationships and within narcissistic family systems. Susie's also currently studying for her master's in social work and is deeply passionate about social justice, equality, and human rights. Susie brings lived experience, compassion, and clarity to this work, and I am so grateful that she's here. So Susie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here. I love when we get to hang out and chat.
I know.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And just thanks for all that you do to serve women and to help people heal.
Yeah, thank you. And same right back at you.
So this term high conflict divorce, what do you wish that people knew, especially professionals? What do you wish we understood about what's really happening with the term high conflict divorce?
Yeah. Well, I think you summarized it really well at the beginning that I kind of refer it, I say like it's oftentimes a misdiagnosis of what the situation truly is, because like you say, typically in the courtroom, when there is this high conflict dynamic, the court professionals, whether it's the lawyers, the judges, the guardian ad litem, I think oftentimes they just attribute it to, you know, hurt feelings in the marriage, and these two people just can't get along, and it takes two to tango, and all of those, you know, those phrases that are used, I think, when you see this type of dynamic. But the reality is that pretty much most and almost all of these so-called high conflict divorces or custody battles, underneath that, like you said, is this element of coercive control. And it's not a new dynamic. It's a dynamic that has been present in the, you know, the lifespan of this relationship, most likely. And kind of what's under that coercive control and what drives these high conflict custody and divorce situations is really are three things. Number one is the abuser's need for control. Number two is the abuser's need to win. And then the third one is the abuser's desire to hurt or punish the healthy parent. So it's all three of those things that are like in the mindset of the abusive person that drive them to do anything and everything they can to win, you know, to win that custody battle or win that divorce and whatever winning looks like for them. So, yeah.
And, you know, it's, the terminology around this is so, like, it's so important because you said it's not two people equally causing harm.
Right.
You know, it's one person abusing and the other person responding.
Right. Right. And oftentimes reacting, like when you're in that situation, in this high conflict situation, and you're the healthy parent just trying to, protect your children, and they push you so far to get a reaction out of you so that they can paint you as an unstable person or an unhealthy parent, So it's can be a really, really challenging situation for people.
One of the things you said, it takes two to tango. Oh man, that's something that I was told a lot. It's kind of like, well,
Right.
what's your part of it? Like, well, it takes two people. There's two sides to
To
every
every
story.
story, right.
Like, you know what? That's just not true. Like, not
Right.
with abuse. It's just,
No, not with abuse. Yeah. I completely acknowledge that there's relationships and there's marriages where it's just not the right fit. People try and they're just fundamentally too different, or things happen, infidelity, things like that happen. But yeah, when there is abuse, it needs to be viewed through a different lens. And family court professionals need more education around identifying abuse and recognizing these patterns, because unfortunately, oftentimes children are put in harm's way because allegations of abuse aren't taken seriously, whether it's towards the parent or towards the children. And I think I don't know the exact statistic, but one thing that I think keeps driving me to work in this space is the fact that if the healthy parent, the victim or the survivor, is raising abuse allegations in court, they are actually more likely to lose custody of their kids. And it just
What is
that just should
that?
not that just should not be the case, or if it's, domestic violence towards the parent, it's just minimized. It's viewed as not harmful to the kids, when we both know children who witness domestic violence, even if it's not physical abuse, it affects them. It's traumatic, and it can have a really long-term effect on kids. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the family court system. And I think there's some progress happening with, the implementation of Kaden's Law across some different states, but it's not being adopted quickly enough, in my opinion. And children are suffering from that, because of that. So, yeah.
I think it's so important for like professionals, therapists, and all of that to kind of be educated on this, because if we're trying to help someone through this and we don't know the language to use, or we can push them into further harm.
For sure.
Yes. In the legal system, I have been blown away at how it is set up to protect the abuser and to harm the victim.
Yeah, it gets my blood pressure going. I
Me
think
too. I
it's it,
feel it. I feel it
when
right
I hear
now.
yeah, when I hear some of these stories from some of the women I work with, it's one of those things that I can feel, like, the temperature rising in my body. Like, this is just so it's just so wrong, the things that happen. And I think that's just like my sign to lean in more, and try to have an impact, whether it's working with somebody who's going through it or advocating for change in the court system. That's where I plan on spending my time in the next, in the foreseeable future.
Wow, that's awesome. And we need that. And I'm right there. Like, my blood starts to boil. Like, when I hear what some of my clients come up against in the court system and like how they end up becoming the villain somehow, when all they're doing is like they're traumatized by the situation and they're just trying to do what's best for their kids, but the court system wants to do what's fair the parent instead of look out for what's in the best interest of the children. It's so disheartening,
It really is. There can be change at some point, but I think it's going to be a long game for that
But
to
you know what?
happen.
It starts right here, right now, like having these conversations, because people just aren't taught. You don't know something that you don't know, and when you know something different, you can also think different, do different. And that's what I'm hoping that we're kind of doing here, is changing the conversation so that we see things differently and we offer a different way of viewing things. And so it's, yeah, it is disheartening. And at the same time, it's like, what the hell? Like, okay, so let's do something about it.
What can we do?
let's fight. How do we fight for justice? And I know you and I both kind of have that advocacy piece of it's just like, no, I'm not going to turn a blind eye to what's happening, and let people suffer in silence and alone. Let's do something, let's at least bring awareness that this is what's happening.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And I do think there's more. I think there's a little movement building, I think, with it. More and more people becoming advocates or getting educated and trying to influence some change. So hopefully, slowly but surely, we'll get there and these things will be taken seriously.
One day at a time, right?
Exactly.
We'll do our part, right?
Yep, for sure.
So let's talk about separation abuse. Because a lot of times survivors think leaving this is going to bring peace, but what it does is it escalates. What is it happens with that, with narcissistic situations? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is really common for abuse to escalate in the months, sometimes years after a survivor leaves an abusive relationship. So, yeah, you're right that a lot of people get through that relationship. There's so much it takes to just leave the relationship. And I remember feeling this way too, like breathing this sigh of relief that finally, I'm out of that situation. I can breathe again. I just have to go through the divorce process, or I just have to get through the, kind of check off these boxes, not realizing that that separation triggers a lot of things in the narcissistic personality or somebody who is coercively controlling because they're losing that sense of control. Narcissists thrive on having this outward image that is, successful at whether it's work or relationships or as a parent. So when their partner leaves them, then it completely tarnishes that reputation or that view that they think people have of them. And then there's that, like that, like I said, just that underlying control piece. And that's where the custody, battles can just get really ugly, where they want to win. They want to have majority custody or at least 50-50. So they can make life really difficult if the survivor's digging in their heels on that. So the post-separation abuse, I tell people a lot of times, and I don't do this to discourage people from leaving, but it's something they have to think about before they make that decision, that it most likely will get worse before it gets better. And you have to be prepared for that because, like, mentally, it's when you see that person like trying to ruin you and devastate your life, it's like, what the heck is happening? Like, we share children, we've done all these things, and now this. So it's good to be mentally prepared. Get your ducks in a row for that. Make sure you have the right attorney who understands abuse dynamics. Start putting your story together, because if you do go into the courtroom with just examples of isolated incidents and you aren't able to really convey there's a history here of control, and a history of abuse, it's likely that it won't be taken seriously, or it will be minimized. So yeah, unfortunately for a lot of people, it gets worse before it gets better. But that's where you just have to learn to manage that relationship as best you can. So I'm sure we'll get into that too. But
I mean, I find that sometimes it even gets worse than it ever was in the relationship. Like you see nasty,
it
evilest
just
come
takes
out.
Yeah, like it takes a different form, if they can't, if there was a lot of physical abuse in the relationship and now that you're not living under the same roof, that is minimized, that's not happening any longer. Then that emotional abuse, verbal abuse, manipulation, trying to control, parenting time or manipulating those situations, all of that can really ramp up. And it feels, I don't know, for me, I felt like that post-separation abuse was more damaging than the abuse that I experienced in the marriage. I think because they really target, like, they target you as a parent in most cases, and your ability to be a good parent when you're going through these high conflict divorces. And that is like the most devastating,
Which I think, now that you mentioned that, I think one of the really super important pieces of this is your own personal healing. We're
For
doing
sure.
deeper work of healing this trauma and healing that pain, because all of that's getting tapped into with all
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
not having that kind of solid foundation where you know your worth and you know your value, and they get to hurt you in a really deep way.
Sure.
And they do. I think it's because we can't wrap our brain around that people like this exist, that they literally just want to destroy you and harm you and hurt you, and you would never do
Right.
that to someone. And yet it's happening, and you're just like,
Right. What is happening?
is this a dream? Like, am I crazy?
Right.
It's really, are people really this evil?
Right. Yeah. And yeah, when it's someone you've shared children with, or even
Yeah.
most relationships, even when there's abuse, there were good moments too. It wasn't always bad all the time. So it's like you
Yeah.
have shared some good moments with this person. So how can they possibly do that? And how can they not see? I think this is what like blows my mind the most is how
Yeah.
can they not see that by harming the healthy parent that they are harming the children? Because if you're disrupting that person's life, their foundation, they're tearing them down as a person, they're not going to be able to show up as that stable parent for their kid unless they're getting the support, getting the therapy, like
Yeah.
having help finding a way out of that. That's what I think what disturbs me the most about it is being so blinded by that need to control, to win, to hurt that person that you don't see that that's hurting the kids.
Yeah.
I hate
And
that part about it.
I do too. And to see them even use the kids
Right.
to hurt you know,
Right.
hurt
Right.
kids in the midst of trying to hurt you.
Yeah.
There's just such a disconnect of actually like caring about the kids.
Right.
You know, it's one thing for them to do that to us, it's another thing for it to impact our kids. That's like
Yeah.
next.
That's
So
like, hell no. I know you did. Yeah.
yeah, the mama bear
The
is,
mama bear can come out.
yes, most definitely. So that's kind of another good thing to shift into is the co-parenting.
Air quotes. I love the air quotes. For people who are
Co-parenting.
just listening, co-parenting has to be in air quotes in this conversation.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And why that's kind of impossible with a narcissist. So tell us more about that.
Well, I think to sum it up, I would say because trying to co-parent with someone who's abusive or narcissistic just continues to put you in harm's way, and you can't continue to put yourself in harm's way if you want to show up as the safe and stable parent for your kids.
Right.
So that's where you have to adopt a different approach, and that's parallel parenting. So
Okay.
I think now this wasn't a thing back when I got divorced, but I think parallel parenting actually is in some of these cases being like written into parenting agreements that the parents are only to communicate when it is a topic that's directly affecting the children, the health and well-being, education, activities, like those key topics. But otherwise, each parent, has their own home. They have their own rules in their own home. They're not trying to align on, let's make sure everyone eats organic in both households. Let's make sure
Yeah.
everyone's in bed by 8 p.m. It's really, you have to manage, things within your own household and acknowledge that unfortunately you don't have any control over what's happening in the other home. So that's what I recommend to people who are in this situation is that parallel parenting approach to protect their peace and sanity so they can start healing and, moving forward rather than continuing to get sucked into toxic communication, defending themselves against ridiculous accusations, all those things that can happen when you're experiencing that post-separation abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a really important thing for people to know, to learn about, because many have probably tried to co-parent and are just like keep hitting a brick wall. And this is kind of another way. Like in a healthier divorce situation, yeah, maybe you could do that.
Right, for
You could
sure.
like try to create some safety for the kids and everybody.
Consistency.
Yeah, but that's not
Right.
the case in a narcissistic abuse situation.
Right.
And so we kind of have to find a different way that keeps you safe, the kids safe, and create that, you know, the separation of that. It sounds like
Yeah.
you're saying with parallel parenting, it's kind of like when you have the kids, then they are kind of under you and you decide what that looks like, but you don't really get to say what happens when they're with
Right.
the
Right.
other parent.
And the communication is between you and the other parent is very limited, and it's very businesslike, you know? So at least what's coming from your side needs to be businesslike,
Yeah.
because narcissists thrive on getting reactions and knowing they can still control some element of your life, whether it's your time with the kids or your emotional state. So it's important that in that, parallel parenting scenario, that the communication is very brief, businesslike. It's called gray rock communication style. People who are experiencing this, if you started researching down the path, you've probably come across gray rock.
Right.
Or I think it's sometimes referred to as yellow rock too. Like if you're actually in a court battle, yellow rock is a little more like friendly seeming, so you don't come across as being uncooperative or cold or whatever. But once you're kind of through that, then it turns into, not giving your energy and responses to harmful communication or things from your ex that don't have to do with the kids. If they are accusing you and you feel like you have to defend yourself, and it's a very short, no, that's not true, and you move on. And I will not respond to any more messages on this topic, so it's just very like almost robotic and businesslike that you have to become, because
Yeah.
you can't continue to fuel that fire for them. They need to find another source of supply for themselves.
Right.
So, yeah.
This is about keeping your own sanity and protecting your peace so that you can care for your kids.
Right.
So you're
And
not.
heal, and heal. Like I think that was something that I learned looking back. There's no way I could have done any healing work in those years following the divorce, because it was like constant and I didn't know these things, so I would
Survival.
get right. I would get caught up in these communications, and I'd get all fired up, and my nervous system was all out of whack. And it's so hard to heal when you're constantly in that cycle. Like you have to get out of it, because that cycle that is present in abusive relationships, that's what continues through this post-separation abuse. It's a constant cycle, and you have to try to break out of that as best as you can.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Know that women are in this situation really need to hear this. You know, the
Yeah.
patient is power on this. And I know I had a lot of pressure from the outside of how I was supposed to be co-parenting with someone who I knew I couldn't co-parent with because there was no team
Right.
happening.
Yeah.
That pressure to do that, you know, we're releasing that pressure here.
Right.
We're like, you don't have to do that, and that's not really good for you or your kids.
Right.
Force yourself into
Right.
situations where you're just getting more harm. You're just staying caught up in the cycle. You're just staying emotionally engaged in something. And as long as you're emotionally engaged, they're just going to keep doing it because that's what they want. Like they
Right.
want a reaction. They want you to get angry and they want you to be all dysregulated. That's the supply.
Right. Yeah. I go back to the Taylor Swift. I know you're a Swiftie, so I gotta quote Taylor Swift. In her interview on the New Heights podcast, she said, your energy is expensive. Not everybody, I don't remember the whole quote, but like not everybody gets access to it. And that's what I tell my clients is that's how you need to view your output, like your responses. Like every response you give, it's an energy suck. And if you are getting fired up and you're firing back a response, and you're not gonna get the last word, so sure enough, another one comes back at you, like that's depleting your energy, and your energy is
And it's
expensive.
not worth
You're
it.
not a right, it's not worth it. So,
They don't deserve it, you know?
yeah.
Like you got to value your own energy and give it
Right.
to the people that deserve it, you know? And the
Right.
ones that are pouring back into you too, you
Right.
know? Like,
Right, sure.
and I find that's just part of healing, you know, it's part of recovery, it's part of realizing actually I get to decide where I expend my energy, emotion, and all of that, and not everyone
Right.
deserves that, especially in people. So
Right.
the less we give them access to that, the less it depletes us. And then we have
Absolutely.
more to give to the people that actually need it. Like our, you know,
Right. The people that care about us and
yeah, the people that care,
aren't trying to destroy us.
right? The life-giving relationship.
Right. Yep.
Man, so let's talk about kind of the impact on children and just family systems in general. Abuse is present, even if it's subtle. Like, talk about that a little bit. What is the impact?
Well, that's a big topic.
I know.
The narcissistic family system is a very real thing. So that's something I educated myself a lot about, you know, as I was writing my book, and had a few clients approach me who had grown up with a narcissistic parent, and I started learning about these different roles that narcissists create within the family system. So I think the three main ones are the golden child, which is the child that the narcissist kind of uses as their trophy, as an example of their stellar parenting, you know. So it's the kid that excels in school and sports. Oftentimes they're an attractive kid, you know. They're that example of their perfect parenting, and they're treated that way in the family. They're given, you know, preferential treatment. They're given the gifts. They're given all these things because they're this shiny object that needs to be held up, you know, held up to that standard. Then you've got the scapegoat child, who is the one who typically is like the more intuitive child in the family, who's not afraid to speak up when something doesn't feel right to them and something feels wrong, but then they're punished for that. So they learn that, you know, it's not safe to use my voice. It's not safe to speak up. They're treated as less than. So, you know, obviously that has an impact on just their self-worth and their self-esteem. So there's that scapegoat child, and then there's the lost child, who is the one that's kind of, you know, neglected almost within the family, not given the attention, not given the resources. They're kind of almost an afterthought when it comes to like the kids within the family. So you can imagine too, you know, that has obviously an effect on self-esteem. It can lead to long-term anxiety, depression, as an adult. So they create these roles within the family system really to kind of keep that element of control. If you've got one child that's treated as the golden child and another child that's treated as a scapegoat, those two kids most likely aren't going to have a really close relationship. If they did, they might gang up on the narcissist, or they might both call the narcissist out. So it's just that way of kind of keeping that dynamic. It's triangulation, you know, within the family system, so people can't join forces and, you know, kind of revolt against the narcissist. So those roles themselves obviously have an immediate and a long-term impact on children. But then there's also tactics that narcissistic parents use. I go over these in my book. So I don't know if I think I've got 10 ways that narcissistic parents sabotage their children and how to counteract those things when they're in your care. But a few that just come to mind are, you know, they'll make kids feel unsafe unnecessarily. So, you know, if a child is 12 and they're perfectly capable of going to the park by themselves, they may say, "No, you know, you're not safe leaving the home without me," or just making kids feel like unsafe to the point where it kind of stifles their own growth and development, but it keeps them closer to the narcissist and more in the narcissist's control.
Depending on them.
Right, dependent, right, for sure. I'm going to refer to my book. I won't go through all 10 of them, but they kind of through this creation of the roles within the family system, they teach kids that emotional responses and feelings are bad. So when you think about the scapegoated child, they're the one that's going to speak up and voice their opinions, and then they're going to get punished for that. So they're themselves obviously learning my emotions, my feelings, my opinions aren't safe to give. But then also the other children and family, if you've got a golden child observing that and seeing, okay, well, my brother got bad grades. He just got like verbally destroyed for, you know, 15 minutes by our dad. So I'm definitely going to stay in line. I'm definitely going to keep my golden child status because I can't mess up, or this is going to happen to me. So they create those feelings that emotional responses are bad. They also create an environment where rage and shame are normal. You know, we know in most abusive family dynamics, the abuser is oftentimes, you know, a yeller, or you know, they'll swear at the children or slam doors or just like have that kind of intimidating presence where the family ends up kind of that becomes their normal. You know, the children and the partner, if they're in the home, they grow accustomed to walking on eggshells. So that can be another outcome.
Oh.
Then I'll see if there's any others. I think in general, narcissists will use similar tactics with their children that they'll use that they used for you. So if they were gaslit you a lot, if they told you you don't remember that right, or that's just not true, chances are they're going to do that with their children too. And they do things like adultify children. They, maybe expose them to things or topics that are that they're not ready for yet because of their own needs, their own, need for comfort or validation or whatever it might be. So yeah, a lot of things can be happening, and it's just good for people to be aware of that if you do have a co-parent who is narcissistic, so that you can look for these signs in your kids of things that might be happening in the other house and kind of counteract those things when they're with you.
Yeah. So important. I think that's a huge thing, is like they tend to try to turn siblings against each other, family members against each other as much as they can, so that it keeps them from coming against the actual person that's the problem, you know?
For sure.
That's so mind-blowing to me. You know? And that's why I think kids have to know how to protect themselves. Like they've got to know like what's healthy, what's not healthy.
Learn to set some boundaries if they can.
Absolutely, that they're not responsible for their parents' emotions.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a really big one.
With the I definitely saw some of that happen in our family with the scapegoat. You know, it becomes the one that everyone kind of blames, because when they speak up and call something out that's valid, then it makes the abuser get riled up and voice it up or whatever. And then so then we're jumping on the scapegoat, because you're like, can't you just not say anything or have
Stay
this,
quiet.
And they're like, but this is wrong. Their little justice, part is like, but this is wrong. That's not fair. This is not okay. Like, we shouldn't be treated this way. And everyone else is like, yeah, but like,
Don't
don't.
rush. Don't upset the apple cart. It's better to stay quiet. And those situations just reinforce that. It's like it strengthens those roles, because again, that golden child who's afraid to speak up and lose that status within the family, they are going to stay quiet. They're going to feel so much safer in that role than their sibling who's speaking up, So.
And you know what I did with my girls is I kind of became that person of like, oh, hell no, we're a family. We're not going to treat each other like this, you know? And so as siblings, it's like, we're going to take the time to hear one another out and say, because the truth is they're not being treated the same. They're having two totally different experiences, but they both matter and they're both valid, but why they're responding differently. So they've got to learn how to kind of put themselves in each other's shoes to understand, oh, now that makes more sense that you feel that way. And you know what I'm saying? So like, but as a parent, like we had to fight hard to make sure our kids didn't become the victims in that way. They were pit up against each other. And thankfully for me, I had a lot of access to my kids, and they trusted me. And so I was able to, no, like we are not doing that.
Have those conversations and call it out.
But it's important that people that are going through this, as parents, that we know to look out for that. So we know that that is kind of part of what happens, and to know how to do it, like how to handle it, how to protect your kids, how to,
Make sure if you know that they're treated differently in the other household, that that's not the case in your household. You're treated the same, you're treated with fairness. There aren't different rules for you to, for the two of you or however many kids there are. So it's important that you almost overdo those things, I think, when they're with in your care, to just again kind of counteract that messaging they're getting in the other home.
And I've heard a lot of people kind of say, well, kids need two parents, or it's best for kids to have two parents, and that's why there's such a push to keep them together. But What's the truth about that? What do kids actually need?
Well, I mean, studies have shown that children can thrive with just one safe and stable parent in their lives. So I think there was a Harvard study that took place back in like two, I think it was like 2015. And that was one of the main findings was actually kids just need one. They just need one, you know, that, and
Yeah.
they can be okay. It's the kids that have little to no support that will struggle. So, I mean, I think in a perfect world, kids do have both parents in their lives. I think, like, we going back to just the reality of the family court system, it's very challenging for anyone to get sole custody of their kids. So I think it's
Yeah.
whether it's right or wrong or needed or not needed, it's the reality that the majority of people are going to face when they go through a divorce is there's going to be some shared parenting time. So it's a matter of, again, like educating yourself on these things, understanding the parenting style, the narcissistic family systems, doing your healing work, learning how to protect yourself and have good boundaries so that you can, your home can be that safe haven, where the kids can take a deep breath and show all their emotions and just feel that sense of peace when they walk in the door. Because just having that environment, even if it isn't 100% of the time, can set them up for success and being healthy, functional, thriving adults and, you know, in the future.
Yeah, that's really
Yeah.
helpful. So if there's women out there right now kind of finding themselves in this situation, and as we're talking about this, they're like, holy cow, that's me. Like, what do you want to say to those?
I think I would say, but I was just talking to a mom about this last night. I think I would say you have more power than you know. Because in these situations, whether you're still in the court battle or it's months, years down the road, and you're still dealing with this high conflict dynamic and the post-separation abuse, you feel powerless. It's really hard to not feel like I can't escape this, and this is going to be my life now for the next however many years. And it can feel really deflating and defeating and hopeless. But through educating yourself, through understanding these things, and again, the boundaries, the healing, all of those things, you have power there. You know, you have power over what that can look like, and you have power over what the environment is in your home. So I think that would be my little message of hope that, and something to just be thinking about when you feel powerless, that you do have things within your control. You have a lot more within your control than you realize. So,
And actually, like, focus your time, effort, energy on what you
yeah,
can control,
right. For sure. Yes, we can get sucked into these dynamics that we just have no control over, and it's not a good use of our time and energy. So, got to focus on those things that you can have some influence over.
Absolutely. And so I'm just curious with you. I know you've been through a lot. Obviously, you can talk about this because you have some understanding around it, right? You have.
Yeah. A little further in my rearview mirror, so that helps.
So what is it that's kind of inspired you to do the work that you're doing now to help people?
You know, obviously my own experience and being able to, when I left my, we've talked a little about this before, but when I left my long-term corporate job in 2020, I finally had some time to think about my experience. And you realize looking back by going through it, you educate yourself along the way and you learn things and you're like, wow, I wish I would have known this and I wish I would have known that. And I think just knowing that I had that knowledge and that there were people who are on the cusp of that situation that may have no idea like what's ahead of them, just being able to be a resource for people and be like a safe space for someone who's going through it keeps me in it and keeps me motivated. I think like we talked about, just like hearing some of these injustices that happen within the family court system too, those have been my toughest ones to help people solve. And so it makes me want to lean in and learn more and like just get into it more to figure out how can I help people in these situations and navigate it the best they can. Because I don't know, unless you've experienced it yourself or have a really good attorney or people in your corner who understand, it's hard. It feels really lonely and scary and all the things. So if I can just be that for that person and help guide them along the way, then that feels really fulfilling to me, and I enjoy doing the work. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love
Keeps
that.
me.
I know. So, being the trauma therapist that I am, knowing that so much of your healing has been about really you reconnecting to that little girl, what do you think little Susie would say to you today?
I can't believe you're doing this.
I
Like, probably like the little Susie that was the type
Yeah.
A. I was kind of that, like the golden child who never did wrong, who never spoke up, who never just fell in line with everything. Like, this whole process for me and writing the book and sharing my story has definitely pushed me out of my comfort zone. And it's like tested that little girl inside of me who's been afraid to use her voice. So I think she would be like, whoa. I can't believe you're doing this. Wow. But she'd be proud. I think she'd be proud. Yeah.
So proud. Like,
Yeah.
so proud. But if you got to say something to little Susie, what would you want to say to her?
Probably you're going to be okay because I think there's still that part. There's still that, we don't lose that little girl inside of us, right? So there's still that fear that comes tugging on my pant leg sometimes. And I think just like reminding myself, you'll be okay. You can weather, whatever storms come ahead and just keep going and keep doing the work. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And you matter, and
Yeah.
you and we're in this thing together, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I got you.
Got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
So the name of our podcast is Not That Girl Anymore. What does that mean to you, Susie?
I think it kind of goes back to what I just said. Like, I'm not that little girl anymore who stays silent to stay safe, whether it's doing my work or speaking up about something that happened in politics that I'm not happy about, or whatever it might be, or just advocating for myself. It's not like it's become easy for me, but I think I've gotten to the point, maybe it's middle age, maybe it's just life and getting tired of not using my voice, but I feel like there's something within me now that won't allow me to stay quiet. It's like, no, it's coming out. So hopefully you can say it tactfully this time. Here it comes. I just feel like I can't hold back as much as I used to be able to keep the peace or to keep myself safe or whatever. I'm like, I just
That's it.
can't.
But we're not that girl
Not
anymore. We're
that girl anymore. Watch out.
not that girl
So,
anymore. So tell
yeah.
us, last question, Susie. What are you excited about now?
What am I excited about now? I mean, I'm excited about a lot of things. I think just seeing where life takes me. I still, like you mentioned, I'm about halfway through my master's in social work. I still plan on working with, I work primarily with women, and I plan on continuing to work primarily with women. I'm not opposed to, working with male clients, but I just relate the best to women. I am one.
Yeah.
So, I know I want to continue that work, but I don't know, just kind of curious where my work will take me over the next 10, 15 years, however long I'm still going at this.
Yeah.
So that part is exciting to me. I mean, I meet people, new people like you who, you connect with new people. You never know where connections will take you, what new ideas might come. So I think it's just like kind of that unknown of what life will look like in 4 or 5 years. That gets me excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. I'm excited for you too.
You.
Hard work, but it's fun.
Well, and it's worth it.
You meet some amazing people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So Susie, tell everybody where they can find you. Like,
Yeah, I mean, pretty much if you just Google my name, Susie Miller Wendell, and it's Wendel, you will find my website. My website's under my name, just Susie Miller Wendell. My YouTube channel is Susie Miller Wendell. My Instagram is Susie Miller. So, like, if you're looking for me, you can
Okay, perfect.
find me by just searching for my name. I try to keep that part simple.
Yeah.
But I do have my main platform, it just for like getting my ed like the education out there and just talking is YouTube. So if someone is looking for any type of educational content around abuse or anything like that, you can find me over there with just by typing in my name. And you can find my book on Amazon if you're interested, if anyone's interested in that. I'm working on some other projects.
Yeah.
Follow me. There might be some more things coming early next year.
Yeah. I want you to tell us a little bit more about your book because I just realized you
Yeah. Yeah,
haven't.
no, that's fine. So yeah,
Okay.
you said the name. It's Nurturing After Narcissism. This is my draft copy, so it's not my final one, but Nurturing After Narcissism, Raising Thriving and Resilient Children After Divorcing a Narcissist. So you can find it on Amazon. It's available in the hard copy or ebook. I'm hoping to record do an audio recording of it at some point, but really it's a lot of the things we talked about today, just how it's all around like how to be the safe and stable parent for your kids, whether it's, starting your healing journey and things you should be kind of mindful of as you start that process of healing. I talk about the parallel parenting piece and how to protect your peace through the way you approach communication with your ex, and then go into like the narcissistic family system, the parenting style of a narcissistic parent, and how to counteract that type of parenting when the kids are in your care. Those are the main kind of the main things that are in the book. But it's all around like how do you create that safe haven for your kids so that they have that safe and stable person in their life that they need.
Cool. So good and so needed.
Yeah, it is. There's too many people, unfortunately, going through this.
I know.
So,
I know.
yeah.
But look at what you're doing to change that. Thank you for the work that you do to see women, to love women, to help women heal and take back their life, you know.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing because, from your story and from what you're doing, you're kind of like, well, it's not just enough for me to do that. I want to give that away.
Right. Yeah, right.
I love that. I love that about you, and I'm with you in that.
I know you are.
I'm healing, but I'm bringing as many women with me as I can.
The
So.
world needs us, right? And our kids need us.
Yeah.
Moms have a lot of power. Women have a lot of power.
We do.
So we've got to be at our best and feeling the best we can.
Yes. And
So,
I believe you heal women, you heal the world.
yeah.
Women are going to heal people around them and
Yeah.
bring
That nurturing,
it.
right? That
Yeah.
nurturing approach that we have. So it's
It's
important.
beautiful. So if you guys need what Susie offers, please reach out to her. If you can relate to her story and you want specific help around high conflict, coercive control situations, like Susie is your girl.
Yeah, and I do offer a free 30-minute discovery call. So if there is anybody out there who is interested in chatting, that you can find that on my website. You can find it on my YouTube channel. I've got a link there, Instagram, pretty much all of my platforms. You'd be able to find that free 30-minute consultation. I just was talking with a mom last night, and we talked for I think an hour and a half. So I say 30 minutes, but I'm there for you. Like I want to hear your story, and I want to hear what's going on. And, let people ask me questions that they have. So that's there if somebody's interested in just dipping their toe in, seeing what it'd be like to work with me. So.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for just being here with us today, Susie.
Thank you.
Thank you for this conversation. And if this conversation has stirred something in you, just know that you're not alone. You matter. Your story matters. Your pain matters. Your dreams matter. And you're not that girl anymore.
Darn right.
Hey, friend, just a quick note. I am a licensed therapist, but this podcast isn't therapy. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anything. It's here to offer you support, encouragement, and real conversation. If you're struggling, please reach out to a trusted professional. You are not alone, and you are so worthy of healing. Even if your voice shakes, keep using it. Your healing matters. If you're ready to go deeper, you can book a session by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting our website, embraceyourbrave.org, to learn more about our therapy and trauma-informed coaching options. Let's explore how we can walk this journey together. You are not alone. Embrace your brave, sis. You're not that girl anymore.